What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I am your host, Brett McGrath, and this is Auction Talk. I got my man, Nick, at the Wharf Sports Cards. We're past the month mark of Auction Talk. Are you enjoying it? Do you like these long-form conversations? Do you like us digging into what is happening, how cards are ending up, what cards are coming up? The thing I like most about these conversations is digging in and talking about the players. Auctions always produce new cards of players that are near and dear to us and players that we often forgot about. And I love this conversation and all of these conversations as an opportunity to bring some of these players back to the focus. You're going to get that in this conversation. If you are looking for a place to sell your damn cards because you have more cards to buy, hit up my man Nick. Use the promo code STACKING50. It's all in the show notes. $50 off your first consignment with Nick. We're going some more. Hope you're enjoying Auction Talk. Let's kick it to the conversation. All right, we are back with Auction Talk. Special edition for us, and us, I mean myself and Nick. We are recording this well in advance. I have a kind of a wacky schedule this week, so we're recording it on the weekend, and we were just talking about getting help when we're doing these sort of things. And so I'm at my parents' house. They're watching my daughter, giving my wife a little bit of reprieve. Nick, I know after you get done recording this, you're doing the same thing. I think that's like, as parents who create content in the space, you know, we have to do it isolated. And sometimes we need help. And that help is typically our better halves taking the load of all the kids and stuff. But we got to pay our dues too. So on the other side of this, you and I are going to be in full dad mode. But for now, we get to talk cards for about an hour or so.
Yeah, man. It's a nice change of pace on a Sunday morning, getting to hop on and talk about cards. But you're right, man. Nothing's free in the dad game. So we're going to have to pay this back, in some way. And rightfully so, right? Our wives do so much for us and so much for the kids. So it's not asking too much. But I'm enjoying the purple or pink scenery in the background there that you have going on. You're at your parents' house, you say?
Yes, I'm in my sister who... I was thinking about this on the way up. I like still refer to her as my little sister, but she's like a mom now, and she's 9 years younger than me though. So she's always kind of like the little sister. So when my parents moved into this house, this was her room, but I knew she had like a desk, and I'm away from my daughter running around. She's eating like I walked in and my parents just like had a box of Krispy Kreme donuts. Like, literally just fed my daughter a cinnamon roll. So she's going to be rolling on the sugar high. So yes, I have a pink background, a little off brand, but we're going to have to make it on brand for today. But I was thinking about this, and we were talking about, we're in full March Madness mode. And dude, I got to give you some credit. Your prediction, rank two, my prediction looked terrible. Then I was like right when the game started, I was like, I'm going to look bad. But then I know you got some heat from Wisconsin fans, but you're telling facts, right?
Listen, I just call it like I see it, you know? I did get that one right. But like I was telling our Wisconsin fan that didn't take kindly to my James Madison over Wisconsin prediction. Most of my sports takes are wrong. The majority of the time, it's just fun to make those picks. But I got lucky with the James Madison over Wisconsin. I feel pretty good about that pick. I will fully blame you for Kansas getting just trounced last night by Gonzaga because you told me Gonzaga would lose in the first round. But that was a rough one to watch. Kansas was up. They made a little rally at the end of the first half. I think they were up one or two at halftime. And then I didn't get to watch the beginning of the second half. I turned it back on. They're down like 15 halfway through the second half. It's just kind of what I expected with that team. But yeah, my bracket is a win just from that James Madison pick.
Yes, no doubt. And I will say this, like, come listen to Auction Talk for all the bad takes. That's what we got. We've got nothing but bad and wrong takes, except for the, you know, every squirrel finds a nut, I guess they'd say, yes. And we'll call that your Wisconsin pick. But because we're recording this in advance, I think one thing we'll not do, which we normally do, is talk through some of the auction recap because those auctions haven't ended yet. But since in lieu of that, I think I was reading No Recent Comps this weekend, and I like how you're adding kind of the question from a member of your community. And I love the question and I loved your response. And I figured maybe in lieu of that, we'll just hit on that to kick off this episode. So I'll start here where I'll read the question, or I'll identify who sent the question and then read the question. And then I know anyone who subscribes to your newsletter has already heard your response, but there are people that haven't. So I figured we'd get into that a little bit. I thought it was a good topic. But Dennis Zender from your community said, why do you think so many great cards have been hitting the market lately? Is it primarily because people are in debt and want to pay it off and leave? Or is it because they are consolidating? Before you jump into your response, I looked at the question, I will say, like, there are always these types of questions that are really thought provoking and good. And it's like, I want to say up front, like, there's no way that we, like, you can say this is what's happening. But I think just small pieces of just what you're seeing and your role and what you're doing, you have enough context to like give a thoughtful response. And I thought you delivered that just in the newsletter. So that's the question, a good way to kick off this episode. Maybe do you want to get into your response? And I don't know, since you've published that, if anything has changed in your mind based on what you said.
Yeah, no, I think it is a great question. And, you know, like you said, we don't know the answer. We're speculating just on kind of what we see, what we know. But only the people selling those cards know why they're selling those cards, right? So, you know, he asked specifically about, like, are people in debt and wanting to pay off and leave? Like, that kind of stood out to me. I think oftentimes people assume when big cards hit the market, like, those people are selling and getting out, right? Because, like, why else would they sell those cards, right? And I don't think that's always the case. And I don't even know if that's usually the case. I think more times than not, it's probably not the case. So, you know, I thought about it and kind of gave a few takes. I think, you know, one thing to consider is, and I talked about this in the newsletter, if you want to read it kind of more specifically, but I'll kind of touch on each thing. Like, one thing to consider is the current economics, right? Like, I don't want to get into like what ties into what. I don't know all the direct correlations or if there are any, but, and I'm the least political person you'll ever meet, but we are like in an election year. There's a lot going on with who's going to be president, like global crises, like all kinds of uncertainties happening right now across the globe, not just here in America. And a lot of times when we're in those situations, like, people get nervous holding on to valuable things that they don't need, right? Like cards definitely falls into that category. So not a new answer, but I think this is a time that we're in where people are evaluating, okay, am I comfortable owning this $50,000 card that I bought for, you know, a lot less a long time ago? Which kind of leads me into another one. I think a lot of what we're seeing, based on the cards that you're seeing and how infrequently they sell, I think we're seeing a lot of collectors that bought these cards a long time ago, you know, maybe 10 years ago, for fractions of what they're selling now. And I think there's maybe some worry that now they might be running out of chances to really majorly capitalize on the value of those cards, right? So, you know, I'll give an example. I was trying to help a client sell a 97 MJ PMG Championship out of 50 PSA 9, right? It was top three highest graded copy. Wanted a huge number for it. Didn't want to sell it because it's his best card. He believes in the long-term value of the card, but he's frankly was actually buying a house and needed a down payment. So naturally, we just sell, you know, pieces of cardboard with people's faces on them to pay off our houses. But, you know, he bought that card for like $10,000, maybe eight or nine years ago. And we had offers over $300,000 on that card. He was able to sell other cards to pay for the house and actually turn down that big of an offer. But he was in a situation where he could sell a lot of his cards because he bought them so long ago and needs other things right now more, and feels like he can come back down the road and get some of these other cards. Maybe not necessarily that MJ PMG and that grade, but honestly, he was comfortable selling it and maybe coming back for a lower grade later, which I think, you know, it's becoming more about the card rather than the grade to a lot of people. That's a whole other conversation. But just because people are selling these great cards doesn't necessarily mean they're exiting. I think it just means they're kind of recalibrating their collections and reprioritizing where their money is right now for the short and maybe middle term. And maybe they circle back for some of these cards, or maybe they start a whole different PC of different cards later. So I think that's something big to consider. And then specifically on his question about debt, like, are people paying off debt? I think there's, you know, we were dealing with that. I know PWCC was calling all, back on all their loans last year when they were kind of going through the acquisition and all that. They're done with that. They don't have any more loans out. I think it's been that way for over 6 months now. I don't know about the other auction houses. I know all of them have always practiced like letting people buy on credit. And who knows what their individual situations are and if people are defaulting on that and they're having to sell a bunch of cards. But I do think that's happening. I just don't know where and the extent of it. But what I said is anybody that was buying cards on credit really before the last year, you know, from like 2020 to really any time in the last, you know, next 3 years after that, and looking at their cards now, they're probably upside down on those cards. So, you know, could be scrambling to pay back some of that credit and get rid of those high interest rates. And that's another reason we see some of these cards. And then the last thing, I know I said that was going to be the last thing. The last thing that I also think is a big thing is we're seeing there's a few card funding companies out there now that have popped up that will basically buy a card on your behalf if you're interested in it and allow you to pay them back with cards. So I think in this type of climate, more people are pursuing that because they don't have extra money, you know, because maybe their other investments aren't really making them a bunch of money right now. So they don't want to pull things out to just add to their collection. They'd rather kind of consolidate, I guess. So, you know, if they're buying, you know, we just sold a Jerry Rice PMG Green privately for a client, and he sold probably close to 100 smaller cards to pay for that Jerry Rice PMG. And those quote unquote smaller cards are great cards. They're grail. Some of those are grail cards for other collectors. So I think that's kind of recirculating great cards back into the ecosystem to fund other great cards. So I know I dropped a lot of kind of theories and reasons there, but I think all of those in some capacity are contributing to us seeing more great cards hit the market.
I literally think we could just go Broadway on this topic for the entire episode, because so much of what you said I want to talk about, but maybe I'll just pick out a few, like one or maybe two things. So I want to go back to this like Jordan PMG example and the down payment of the house. And I want to think about it from the collector who entered the hobby when I came back, when I would say probably a majority of listeners came back who are checking this out right now. And that's people who came back during COVID. I think when we came back, for those that like jumped to the next stage of like, all right, I'm not going to do all this stupid stuff that's at the top of the service that everything's going to do, everyone else is doing. I want to like go a few steps lower and like learn about cards, understand what's held value over time, find out what connects with me personally as a boomerang collector in this space. I think we through Instagram and other means, we meet these collectors who had been doing it forever, who have incredible collections, who bought these cards, you know, a decade ago, and are sitting on just like really great investments because of the time when they bought those cards. So I've always really tried to learn from those people who never took a break, who have always been there and have sick collections because they're buying those cards for pennies on the dollars for what they're worth now. And then I think about like everyone who's been back since COVID. Well, we've been back, and now like you flash forward, it's been like 4-5 years of this. But I'm not sure all of us who have been there, and even if you like got rid of all the BS stuff and you jumped into buying great cards right away, even like 5 years is a long time. However, like based on what's happened to the market, like you mentioned, chances are like just because you bought those cards 5 years ago doesn't mean you're up on those cards. Probably in a lot of cases, you're down on those cards just because of how parabolic the market was at that point. So like, I'm not like stating that to be discouraging, but I think like, I don't know if you're a collector now and you do it because you love it and you're still like, you know, taking your losses and trudging ahead. Is there anything like collectors who are kind of coming out of that period right now who have amassed these awesome collections, how they should think? Like, do you think that it's one of those things where it's like, all right, this COVID boom was like a big blip on the radar, but now if we like put our heads down and just keep buying what we believe in and have conviction in, you know, 10 years from now, we'll be in the same position as that collector who had the Jordan PMG and was thinking about putting it down as a down payment from his house, but ended up using other cards. Like, do you think that opportunity is still alive for people who are, you know, spending as much time in the hobby as, you know, people listening to this show?
I do think so. I think, but the floor has definitely been raised and I think the margins are going to shrink and they're still going to be there. But like this example, he bought this card 8 or 9 years ago for 10 to 15,000. I don't remember the number he got it for and had offers over $300,000. So you're talking about a 20 plus X multiplier over 8 to 9 years. It's hard to imagine we're going to see those numbers on a card like that. Cause then now you're talking about a $6 million card in 10 years. Like that's not going to happen. I'd be shocked if it was a $1 million card in 10 years, honestly, but who knows what's going to happen in 10 years. We don't know. I don't think, you know, we didn't see COVID coming, right? We didn't see that coming and then what it created and you know, what's been going on ever since. So never say never. But like I said, the floor is so much higher now, like getting those good cards is harder. There's more competition. So you're going to have to pay more for them. So I don't think we're going to see parabolic jumps in those cards. I do think they will hold value and increase in value slightly over the long haul. But I think where the real opportunity is still kind of those next tier, I hate to say the phrase, under the radar type of cards that are still of players that people collect, still desirable cards, still rare, scarce, aesthetically pleasing, but you know, in the four figure price points, probably have a much greater chance of going parabolic relative to what you buy them for. I think where the starting point is for price is maybe the biggest variable because there's only so much room that they can grow and there's only so high that the value of these cards are going to get to.
I love that. And I think as we close this topic out, the starting point of the where cards are at and having your ceiling saying like, I am a collector. This is the amount of money I spend on cards. This is my limit for the top end of what kind of card I'm going to buy is really important. Like Jason Contrarian Cards, who was on the Friday episode, was like, I don't buy anything outside of a 1500. Like if it's 2000, like I'm not in that game. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. And I think we get so caught up in the players that we collect and chasing cards that sometimes there's fun opportunities and cards that we can appreciate and resonate with that are much lower. So I love that. And this like no Hall of Fame or kind of MJ topic leads me to like the next one that I want to talk about, where as a football fan, as a Prism simp, I was looking at the 2012 gold Prism football sales that went off on March 21st. There was like 15 or so cards, which is like, you know, just don't see 2012 golds like fly off the board every day. And like a seller was like, all right, I've got these cards. I'm just going to let them run them in auction. They were eBay. Guys like MJD, Dwayne Bowe, Josh Cribbs, guys that like, yeah, they're not Hall of Fame, but like anyone listening who's followed football for that long, like know those players. I think it's interesting when we see players and cards of the same parallel or set, like all sell in one fell swoop like this. I feel like there are a lot of football collectors and collectors I know going after some of those cards because they're important cards, right? If you're a team collector, Jaguars collector, and you MJD is like a huge player to you. I'll never speak for Jaguars fans, God forbid. But MJD was a Colts killer, and I know if you're a Jags fan, like MJD and you're a team collector, MJD's got to be part of your collection. And that card, 2012 first year Prism of MJD, is an important card. And like thinking about, like, you know, Dwayne Bowe, and like, it's not only if you're a Chiefs fan, but if you're an LSU fan and stuff like that. So those cards to me, like, none of them were like break the bank, but they were all strong sales comparatively to like what those players typically get. So I'm curious, like, what maybe are some insights that we can pull when we have these batches of cards, in this instance, 2012 Gold Prism Football, all kind of fly off the board in the same night?
Yeah, it's interesting to follow. I think, and again, it's we're speculating, right? We don't know why this person sold them. But oftentimes, I think it depends on what's being sold. Like in this instance, it was all 2012 football gold prisms, right? So my guess would be, and based off of the guys that sold, it wasn't any big names, people that we would recognize just as football fans, but not any big names. And they were all raw. So my guess is that somebody was trying to chase the 2012 gold prism run and realized that is a difficult
impossible.
Case. Yeah. And said, I'm tapping out now and I'm going to pursue something else. That would be my guess.
Yes.
And if I was betting, that would be where I would put all my money. And there is, like, I know a handful of legit collectors that are aggressively pursuing that run. And there's only 10 of each card, and most, you know, probably half at most ever surface of each player, right? Like, so when you have five people pursuing, you know, cards that maybe two or three of a player surface ever, like, it's hard to complete that run. So I see that a lot as a consigner, where people try to pursue a run or a set or, you know, whatever it is, and they get into it, and they realize how hard it's going to be to finish that. And they, you know, kind of have that come to Jesus moment. Is this something I should keep doing or put this money elsewhere? And then they liquidate the run that they have made on that card. I think it depends on what's happening though. Like, I know we're going to talk about one of these Dennis Rodman cards later. But PWCC auction right now, the weekly auction, is freaking loaded. And there's a Dennis Rodman collection being sold. I think there's like a filter on the side under the feature collection that's like a Dennis Rodman collection, I think it's called. I mean, PNGs galore, credentials galore, every like big 90s parallel and insert of his is in there. My guess on that is totally different. I think that person is seeing a surge in Rodman cards that he probably didn't anticipate, and kind of had to figure out, like, wait, this is happening. Do I want to keep these and ride this through? Are the odds of these cards selling for this much anytime soon, is that high? Is this my chance? And that person, you know, my guess is that they said, this is probably my best chance to make money on these cards. I'll sell them and I can start a new PC. I can come back to these Rodman cards later if I want. You never know kind of where their heart lies with players and cards. But that situation, I think, is a little bit different than the Prism Gold situation, but similar in some rights. So it's always interesting to speculate on that stuff.
Yeah. And one thing I want to hit on before we move off of this is this topic of these products or parallels that are magnets for a set collector. And it might not be like this collector only collects sets, but it's like these cards are so significant to a collector or a group of collectors that they are trying to go and chase it. This is probably a whole nother episode, but I think about that. And I just think about like conversations and looking at collections of, like, you know, Nat Turner, and we had an episode where we were talking about Platinum Medallion. And when you start getting in these, you know, whale collectors with these just ridiculous pockets who, you know, have just some of the best collections in the world, like, and they decide, like, I'm going to go do this. That like rocks. It like comes down and rocks so many different categories of collectors, from team collectors to player collectors. And it, especially when there's a product of something that's so scarce, like, you know, a 2012 gold prism where there's 10 copies. And then we see this with PMGs, like, just over since I've been back in the hobby, just the volume of people trying to collect 97 red PMG set. And so, well, what happens? Like, these guys who, like, maybe like, we remember for a season or two's cards are selling for thousands of dollars. So I'm interested, and you probably have a look that not a lot of us have, just in terms of like what's coming through and what's being sold out. Is this like, I don't know, as collectors, like, how if we, whatever category you're in, if you're a player, team, set, like how do you respond? How do you anticipate? Like, to me, this dynamic is one of the most important dynamics that impacts prices, that plays out over, you know, 3 to 5 year period. And I don't hear a ton of conversations about it, but I see it actively on Instagram and feeds and people talking about collections and sets that they're building out. So like, how do you think about something like that?
Yeah, it's tough. Again, it depends on the scenario. I think like using these two situations again, like if you were ever interested in 2012 Prism Football Gold Prisms, like you should have been jumping all over those cards because they're at price points that are justifiable, right? Like I think the Cribs was the highest selling one of those and it did like $600 and some. Most of those were doing around $200. So again, it's not chump change, but when you compare it to the Rodman collection that's listing right now, like that's going to be $100K plus in Rodman cards selling in the same night. So, you know, you got to pick your spots because most of us can't just buy everything. I think looking at the sales history is important. Like on the gold prisms, the first thing I did when I saw, you know, you were wanting to talk about that topic was I wanted to go look at each player that sold and how many. I went on the card ladder and looked back at the sales history and wanted to see how many gold prisms of that player have sold, different numbered gold prisms, not just the same one selling multiple times. It's kind of an indicator of what's out there, right? Like if Cribs has only had one gold prism sell, you know, it's number 7 out of 10, let's just make up. I'm jumping on that 7 out of 10 when it comes up because it's the only one that's ever come up. If three of them have sold, I know they're out there somewhere, right? So I can, if I can't swing it right now for some reason, I know there's three out there. So the odds of another one surfacing sooner than later are greater than the guy that has only had one copy ever sell in the 12 years that that's been out. I think that's important. But what you said about, you know, how it rocks kind of the collector base, the market for that player, I think it's something to consider. The Rodman collection has me thinking like very recently, it's probably been 6 months now or so. I think it was in the fall. A well-known Griffey collector unloaded a ton of ultra high-end, high-grade, rare Griffey cards within like a month. Griffey collectors were scrambling. And those prices, they sold for a lot less than what people anticipated, but they were anticipating them selling one at a time, you know, once every couple years, right? When you just flood a market with a bunch of high-end cards of the same player, even if they're totally different cards, the people buying those cards are usually the same people and they can only afford so much. So I think this Rodman collection, I'm curious to see how much it does overall relative to any comps of those cards that even exist. But on the follow-up of this, I think it could bring down the Rodman market for a while. And if you are a Rodman collector, I think you're going to have more opportunities over the next 6 to 12 months to gobble up some Rodman cards that haven't surfaced often for a more affordable price point than what we've probably seen in the last like 6 to 12 months for some of his rare cards that have kind of surged over that time frame.
All right. We're going to like put a pin on some of these because I feel like these are fun, exciting. It could be themes of auction talk that we dig into. We don't need to spend a ton of time on this, but we always have these moments of there's these players that are like front and center. Wimby, undeniable. I mean, I'll just say this. He's better than I thought he was going to be, especially at this stage. This kid is going to be like, I have no Wimby cards. I don't plan on buying any Wimby cards, but I think what we're seeing with him on the floor for anyone who is spending just their hard-earned money on Wimby, like obviously market dynamics play a factor, but barring any injuries, like this kid's a pretty special player. It's like I was like, the Spurs were like so not interesting and I'd like avoid him at the beginning of the year. But then as Wimby got going, it's like whenever I can get the chance to watch him, like I got to check it out. But I was looking at like I was curious. It was like, what Wimby cards are being sold? And so I just did a scan on Card Ladder this is crazy. This is like a 5-day stretch from March 17th to the 22nd. And on eBay, 6,015 Wimby cards have sold. And then across all platforms, 6,083 cards were sold. So that is in a 5-day stretch, that many cards are being sold publicly of Wimby, which is insane. And then the highest cards that sold, which this is kind of fun because it's like both of them were the same print run. You had the on eBay, the green Pulsars out of 95 or out of 25 sell for 16K. And then a PSA 10 Mojo out of 25 sold on PWCC for 30,600. All of this stuff is fun. It's exciting. It's what drives the hobby. I think my question to you, Nick, was like, with this volume of sales, with this many cards, with this and many parallels, how do we figure out which of his cards in 5 to 10 years are going to actually matter, especially as this landscape changes? So there's the one thing. And then I'll also say, like, I understand fully a lot of these cards are being bought and resold instantly, whether it's bought online, sold in person. Like, that's just what happens with a player of Wimby's magnitude and the attention he has. So I don't know. Those numbers were overwhelming to me just on volume, the volume sake. But what do you have to say about like what's happening with Wimby's cards right now?
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I would hate to be an actual Spurs fan that collects cards right now because you probably...
Dude, I feel it with Richardson. I feel it with Anthony Richardson. It sucks.
Yeah. I know. On a way lesser extent, I felt it with Sam Howell last year. Like, I wanted to buy his cards just because he was a young quarterback that we actually drafted and he was playing in games. But I couldn't justify $5,000 for his gold prism when I knew he probably wouldn't even be our starter the next season, which has already played out. So I can imagine, I can't even imagine being a Spurs fan the last, like, you know, since the Duncan Parker Ginobili era where they've struggled and just waiting for that moment. You finally get it. You get the pick, you get the generational talent, and then you look at his car prices and you're like, I'm never going to be able to actually collect this player. Which stinks. Like, I genuinely hurt for like actual Spurs fans and collectors. Like that Mojo Prism PSA 10 to 30,000. Like, I was looking at other guys that I know have been hyped, and I looked at Luka, and he didn't have a Mojo Prism sell for 30,000 until like 2022. It's like 4 years into his career. And I know the COVID boom happened, you know, halfway through there, but like, it's stuff to think about. And it's like these cards, most of these cards probably aren't going to end up with collectors for a long time because they're just not going to be able to afford them and then justify paying that money and then just sitting on them for a long time. So that part is kind of sad. I think there's going to be people that make money on them too, though, even at these prices. Like, that's just what the game is now. I saw it closely in the football card market. Like, as much as I wanted to sit here and say, why are you buying this guy? They're buying him and they're selling him a week or two later for 10% margins, and they're moving on to the next card to play. It's all about what they're buying it for and what they think they can sell it for. They have no attachment to it. It's just all about margins. And I don't hate on those guys at all. They're making money on this stuff. Kudos to them. They're keeping cards in circulation. Kudos to them. Like, is there parts of the market that it affects, you know, maybe negatively? Sure. But like, we need those people in the ecosystem. But I think when I think about what cards are truly going to matter, I think that's tough. And for me, I would just simplify it to, like, you know, considering Prism and looking at that Mojo versus that green Pulsar sale, both out of 25, both PSA 10s, the Mojo sold for 2x the green Pulsar. And I think it comes down to the OG parallels, right? The Mojo was more of an original parallel. I think it came in 15. I don't know how original it was. I know Jokic has one in 15. I don't know if Embiid had one in 14. I don't remember, but it's a pretty early original parallel, and people are going to flock to those first in the long term. So that's how I would think about, you know, what cards are going to matter.
Yeah, I think that's fair perspective. Maybe hit on some of these other topics before we get into cards that we normally do. One thing that I was thinking about was just the final stretch we're on going into the playoffs. And it got me thinking about, like, what player, based on the team that they have around them and their chance of doing well in the playoffs, like, maybe, like, what player, like, has the most opportunity to, like, maybe enter, like, the next tier of collectability? And maybe, like, also, like, who has the most pressure going into the playoffs for the same thing? I don't know. Is there... Is there anyone that jumps off the page to you when you're thinking about just like opportunity going in? And this isn't like go buy these players, but I'm just curious, like, where do you think some of these guys stand?
I want to take the less obvious approach. I would think most people would say like who has the best opportunity. I would think they would think of guys like Tatum, right, who's been on the brink and hasn't won a title, but could, right? They're the best record in the NBA. Maybe SGA, maybe Edwards, because they're like a 1-3 seed in the West. Maybe people think they're going to make a run. I would think of people would be high on them for kind of taking that leap if they do win a title. But the hobby in price move is all about expectations and where you kind of fall in, you know, meeting those or not meeting those expectations and how your prices move according to that. So I would say the people with the most pressure are the people on the teams that have the highest probability to win a title, right? Mm-hmm. Like Boston, Denver, I think it's Milwaukee and the Clippers, I believe, are the top four, like in just betting odds to win a title. So I would look at those guys, and I think Tatum has a lot of pressure, but he's so young. If he doesn't win one this year, no, people aren't giving up on him. He's 25, 26 years old. I think Jokic, even though he just won one and is probably going to win his third MVP, I still think he has pressure because as crazy as it sounds, you can win a title and there's still going to be people that are like, well, was that a fluke? You know, like, anybody can win one title. Can they win two? You know, so Giannis, I think, has pressure because he's got two MVPs and a championship, but it feels like he hasn't done much for a while. It's only been, what, 2 or 3 years? You know, I guess 4 years maybe since they won a title. But if, you know, they've had some early exits. You know, I feel like there's some pressure there. They added Dame Lillard. Like, if you don't do something now, you know, when are you going to? And then the Clippers, just with that loaded roster, and they've shown signs in the middle of the season that they can really be dangerous. You know, if they fizzle out in the playoffs, like, what does that mean for Kawhi, PG and Harden? Like, PG and Harden specifically, like, they're getting closer to the end of their careers without a title. What does that mean long term for their legacies? So on the flip side, I think the most opportunity is for the guys. Honestly, when you look at playoff price movement, the ones that go up the most are the guys that have those epic series on teams that don't even go to the finals. Like Luka, the first year he made the playoffs, his prices went nuts because he had special moments in big games. But they lost in the second round, or was it they might have actually went to the conference finals. Trey, when they went to the conference finals, like, made a surprising run. His prices went nuclear. So I think of guys like, honestly, I look at the Pacers, like Halliburton, if they do something, you know, sneaky in the first round, if they make through, I don't even know where they are. Are they in the play-in now?
So they've had a good last couple games. They beat the Pistons, who are lousy, but then they went into Golden State and they beat up the Warriors pretty bad, and Halliburton looked like Halliburton. Now, by the time this drops, they've got the Clippers, Lakers. So anyway, but they're in the sixth spot now, which is great. I'm like, stay in the sixth spot. Yeah. Let's stay right there.
The sixth spot is ideal in the East because you're going to play what, like Cleveland, New York, or, you know, Orlando or something like that. So there's a chance to do something there. Like I think of De'Aaron Fox last year when the Kings made a little run and surprised some people. Like, those are the people that are going to have some price movement in the playoffs. It's those kind of young guys that haven't had playoff opportunities and then do something special.
So maybe in lieu of some of the other stuff we were going to talk about, I think this is, I'm curious to, I want to expand on this a little bit because this is something I've been thinking about a lot. When I was thinking about this question and looking at the teams, and I kind of went in the same direction, the obvious direction that you mentioned up front. But then I immediately like looked at the current like play-in situation where teams were stacked up. And the team that I couldn't help but just stop looking at was the team who, as we record this, is eighth in the West right now, and that is the Dallas Mavericks. We all know what happened last season in Dallas. God forbid, and Luka collectors, investors, Mavericks fans, like, I'm not trying to put negative energy towards you. I think the playoffs are in a much better place with Luka in the playoffs. But what if the Mavericks don't make the playoffs again? Like, what does that do? Like, what does that do for the Luka market? Like, how are we thinking? Do we think about Luka differently? Even though, like, as a player, he is on this like insane run statistically. Like, that's I wanted to bring that topic up and just get your thoughts based on like what happens if Luka doesn't make the playoffs.
This is where I struggle with the Trey comps, because Trey gets just crapped on for playing on a bad team or not having like playoff success, even though he's went just as far as Luka's ever gone. So that's a great question. And honestly, I don't think it will matter. Like, I think people he's still young enough and people still look at that roster and say, yeah, this is still not a really good roster though. Like he shouldn't go far with this roster. So I think the excuses are there still for people. And I honestly, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think much will change. I think that a little bit of that happened last year because it was kind of that first surprise. But dude, I'm looking at the play-in for the West. It's insane. Listen to this. The Kings have a half game back of the Suns. So if that changes, if the Kings win their next game and the Suns lose their next game, the play-in would be the Phoenix Suns, the Dallas Mavericks, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Golden State Warriors. Like, all four of those teams could go to the finals. I mean, you know, maybe it's hard to imagine the Mavs really going to the finals, but the Lakers were in the Western Conference Finals last year. The Warriors are still the Warriors. They're old. It's a little bit different, you know, team right now, but the Suns have tons of talent. They just haven't been healthy. Like, it's crazy how stacked that play-in could be.
As a Pacers fan who, like, literally I'm following like every team that's like jockeying for position every night. And I swear, like, looking at the scoreboard every night and following it, like, I feel like it's been one of those modes where it's like, I feel like I haven't seen the Magic lose in like a month. And shout out all you Magic fans. You've got an awesome, fun young team. But then like the other night, like, they finally lost and it was to the Kings. And I was just like sitting there, I was like, the Kings are a damn good team. Like, that team is awesome. Like, and it just like the West is so deep, and it just, I'm in a position where right now it feels good as a Pacers fan, but who knows? Like, Pacers could be in the plan, but I don't know. I've said this, following the playoffs, I've never followed like the thought of the playoffs this early in the season. It felt like right after the All-Star break, it was like it feels like the playoffs every night. So whatever happens, I don't know. To me, this seems like one of the most fun times to be a follower and fan of the NBA in a long time.
Absolutely. And it just feels like it's relatively wide open on both sides. I mean, the East probably has less parity. Like, the top two teams in the East seem to be a lot better than the rest of the teams, or at least the Celtics. You still have the Heat that are always lurking. They just want to sneak into the playoffs and be the Heat. And in the West, I mean, there's teams that won't make the playoffs that could win a series or two. So it's exciting times, man.
Before we move into like hitting on no recent comps and talking about the cards, I feel like we could go like really long on this, but I don't know. Do you have anything like a SparkNotes version of the Ohtani situation? Because if you are collecting Ohtani, or, you know, nothing else we say matters. Like, this is the only topic that matters. And I don't think, like, you listen to the show, it's like, we don't have the answers, but I'm curious on your end. This is a bullet you put. You're like, the Ohtani situation. So, like, what do you want to remark on here?
I think there's too many coincidences in this situation for him not to have known what was going on. So I'm nervous. But there's a couple sides to this. I think it's just one more thing that you have to consider when you're collecting active players. Like, we used to just have to think about injuries, right? Or like, you know, a DUI or something ridiculous. But now it's, gambling is like so easy for these players to access, and there's so much money to be had. Like, it's a whole other layer you got to think about. And in the social media era, like, everything gets uncovered. Like, you can't get away with anything these days. On the flip side of that, I'm very curious to see how the MLB responds, because there's a lot at stake here politically. Ohtani is an international sensation, brings more attention to the game of baseball than any other player by a long shot. So if you suspend him for a season, or you put gambling allegations on him and prove him to be guilty of that, like, you're probably losing a massive chunk of fans and revenue, et cetera. And the people that run the MLB are old school. And I would not be surprised if they cover up what they need to cover up. This is all speculation, but I would not be surprised if the other guy just takes the fall for this, unfortunately, as sad as it is.
It's in the Patreon groups. Jason Contrarian Cards, like, put some comments out because he's an Ohtani collector. And I was like, I just hadn't, like, been educated enough. Like, it just seems like it popped up and it became the biggest story. And as I was reading articles and trying to get educated, my, like, takeaway was like, man, like, this is the biggest story. Like, fallout is the biggest story, and the implications of this on one sport are just tremendous. So, well, maybe we'll leave it at that, but maybe this is a storyline, especially as his cards maybe come to market in light of this, something that we'll be talking about. Definitely Stacking 50. Use that promo code if you want to send your cards to Nick. We're going to be talking about some of those cards. $50 off your first consignment. I want to hit on no recent comps, which I am always a fan of talking about Galactics, and I'm looking at my notes right now and see you've got a Galactic highlighted. So maybe talk about the 2016 Curry Galactic PSA 10.
Yeah. So, you know, usually we talk about a card in the no recent comps that went up. This is a card that had no recent comps that went down. And I think it's important to highlight that not all cards that haven't sold recently go up. Like, that's, I want to be very clear about that. And this is an example. It sold for $1,800 on March 17th. The last sale of that card was, I believe, it looks like in June 2022. So about a year and a half ago, it sold for $2,010. So not a huge dip. But then in March 2021, that card was selling for $3,500 to $4,000. So over the 3 year span, it's been cut in half, essentially. Very collectible card. I mean, there's not many sales of that card. I think maybe less than 10 all time for a PSA 10, but you know, it's a desirable parallel. It's short printed, but 16 isn't necessarily a significant year, right? It's not a first year Galactic. So maybe that has, you know, somewhat of a variable there. But, you know, I featured it because I thought it was going to be a good opportunity for somebody to grab a collectible card at a price that's a bit more reasonable than what it has been since last sales.
Dude, Galactic is such an interesting parallel because I know there are so many hardcore fans of Galactic. I'm one included. But I would also say for as many Galactics that I bought over the years, I have sold just as many as well. And it just seems like it's one of those cards where it's like, and I will also say, like, I've got Galactics in my collection that I have no plans on selling, but just seems like it's one of those cards that it's really hard to pin down, like, the long-term value. And that's why, like, in my Galactic buying, I've tried to be focused in on, like, the first year of those players and whatever, you know, sport they play, just to, like, try to mitigate risk. Because, like, yes, they're short printed and, like, they're impossible to pull. Like, you have to rip a ton of Revolution just to pull one. And I just know that from talking with a lot of people who are deep in the weeds on Galactics. But I feel like the reason why Galactics fluctuate so much is something that is really simple. And it's, they are short printed, but they don't have a serial number on the back. Like, that serial number, that there's a mystery out around each year how many are printed. And that serial number on the back of a parallel gives collectors peace of mind when they're spending their hard-earned cash. So I love this parallel. I think it's one of the best parallels at an affordable product ever. But the lack of serial number, I think, always is something that I don't necessarily struggle with, but I know a lot of collectors struggle with in terms of, like, spending a ton of money there.
100%. And I think it's sort of a catch-22. Like, the people that love that card, I think some of them love it because it's not serial numbered. It, like, you have to have some knowledge on the card to know how many exist. And I think some collectors actually appreciate that more. But on the flip side, you know, bringing more people into that, if they don't know for sure how many copies there are, they're going to be hesitant. I think you nailed it there.
All right, let's jump into, as I'm getting my screen going, some cards that are catching our attention, and we've talked about Dennis Rodman already. And I just saw this and just saw like the three Rodman PMGs all lined up. And I was just like, man, like it's what's interesting too is championship PMG, kind of the scope view with the city background. If you're listening and you can't see on PwC right now, it's 7 days to go. It's at 9,500 where the gold, I would say the 98, which is out of 50, is at $925. And the red PMG, the 97, which when people think about PMGs, typically this is what they think of. It's out of 100. It's at $2,100. So I like, this is early. And I want to ask you about like maybe your thoughts on just like the differences in kind of where they're at right now. But before I do that, I just think like Dennis Rodman is like one of the sneaky, most polarizing players in cards. Some people think he's completely overrated. Like you look at where he places on like the all-time rebounds list. It's, you know, in the 20s or maybe it's not like the top five, but he's got like, he's got the rebounding titles. He's got the championships. He's like on the top 75 list. He's got the defensive player of the year awards. So he's done a lot, but there's a group of people that say like Rodman is overrated. And then the Rodman truthers are hardcore. Like they're like, this is one of the best basketball players, and Jordan doesn't do what Jordan does without a player like Dennis Rodman. So maybe I'd love to hear your response in that. Like you see a lot of Rodman cards probably come through or have seen a lot of Rodman cards sold. Like Rodman from a collectability perspective, like what are your thoughts? And then the second question is like where these cards are at now and just the different years, like why do you think the gap in between all of them is so high right now?
Yeah, I think Rodman, you know, it's hard to argue what he accomplished. And he was just a niche player. You don't see many niche players. He's probably the most niche player to ever make the Hall of Fame by far, I would imagine. But he was so memorable. I mean, because of the way he played, he was memorable. Like just, he was just like nasty defense, like get under people's skin and just rebound the heck out of the ball type of guy, kind of the enforcer, physically of the team. His hair, right? Like you can't forget that hair. You can't forget when he would get ejected and take off his jersey and throw it in the stands on his way out. Like there's so many things that were just memorable about Rodman. And like you said, I don't know how many championships they win on that second leg without Rodman. And then like, look at the cards, man. Like look at the pose on that championship PMG. Like that's classic Rodman. Like you remember him grabbing rebounds like that. Like there's more to collectability than just where is he at on the all-time stats? How many championships did he win? Which he won a bunch, whatever stats you want to talk about. Like the player has to be memorable for some reason. Like I look at Penny Hardaway, like accolades-wise, he didn't do anything because of injury, but people remember his style of play because it was unique for the time he played. And I look at these prices and just knowing a little bit about the sales history of these, that PMG championship is going to sell for the most by far because it's never sold publicly. The red PMG should still do a big number. I think a PSA 7 did like 40K recently. Now, PSA graded copies of that PMG specifically will always catch a premium over the same graded BGS. I think that BGS 7 will do in the 20 range, considering all the Rodman cards that are out there right now in this auction. And then that the PMG, it's 98 in basketball, right? I'm a football guy, so I think 99. But the 98 there, what people call the gold PMG out of 50, again, classic one-handed rebound pose, will come in third and still do a big number. If you haven't checked out this auction, like even if you don't care about Rodman cards at all, like I think it's going to be a fun one to watch just because of the quality of cards that are in there. And I'm curious to see how so many of them ending on the same night is going to impact each card.
I'll say this just in looking at these while you're talking, like the poses and what these like poses on these cards, just like their signature Rodman poses. I was even looking at like the back of the championship and just the shot there of Rodman. He couldn't be captured. I even think like, I could be wrong, but on the 97-98, he might have the worm shoes, the tie from the side, which is so nostalgic as well. And you go back to the hair. I was a starting lineup collector back in the day. And like one of the most innovative things they ever did was release the Rodman figure in like variations. So they had like the green and the yellow and then the orange hair. And it was like, that was the chase. It was like, go get all the color of hair for Rodman. So like, I don't know, Rodman will always be relevant and will always matter because us 90s kids, like he wasn't just a basketball player. Like he's a mainstream star. I mean, married Carmen Electra. He had a book and he showed up in his wedding dress. There's just so many moments of Dennis Rodman, which I understand why he's so collectible.
100%.
All right, moving to the next one. This one's on eBay, and this is the 99, and this will end. If you like this card, this will end the day this episode goes live. And this is the 99 playoff contenders, Brett Favre, Finesse Gold Refractor, SSD out of 25. It is jersey numbered 4. Why I picked this card, which obviously like the gold is like a perfect color match for Packers fans. And this set, this 99 playoff contenders, I don't know how, if you're not like a big football card nerd, I don't know how much like you've been exposed to this, like people listening, but this is one just because I'm a Manning collector. I got exposed to, and I've never owned the gold, but I've owned the blue, which there's a red, there's a blue, and then there's a gold. And these cards are just like so unique and they don't get talked about a lot, but they're like shiny and cool. And like one thing to note is that they're super sensitive, like the surface is super sensitive. So like it's one thing to like find the card, but then it's another thing for like the surface on the card to not be completely destroyed. I never seen the gold. I don't know if like these cards just haven't been like cards that collectors have talked about, or there was a bunch of product ripped in 99 of these, but like you don't see them too often. So this is one that I think might have just like got, you know, I'm sure the Favre collectors know this exists out there. And I'm sorry if you're going after this card and I'm bringing more attention to it, but like this card is super cool. And it's like one, if you think this card looks cool, like dig into this 99 playoff contenders SSD, because there's parallels, it's fun. And the condition sensitivity is another like element that you can think about when you're collecting.
Yeah, man, I love this set and this parallel. And you know, you talked about the condition sensitivity. And if you look at this card, like there's definitely some issues going on the right side of Favre there. Like I've heard of these cards like rusting. I don't really even know what the front is made out of.
I have a red Marvin Harrison Raw that is just like, dude, it looks like I tied it to a string on the back of my bike and just like rode down the street and then pulled it up. And it's like, it's like no joke. It's like, I don't know if it's the sunlight. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it is tough to keep these things maintained in a good way. It's like more than PMGs, I think.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think it makes the card more interesting because you have to like it's two different categories. There's the card in bad condition and then there's the card in good condition. And there's such a gap. And the ones in good condition are so hard to find. This is, you know, regardless of condition, is a nice copy because it's the jersey number parallel. So that's always unique. But second year contenders, like when you think of football, you think of contenders. Again, this set would do way more if there was a baseball and football or a basketball set of this. I think it's just a little more unknown, which is why I think it has so much upside long term. It's super affordable. It's the only year that you saw these colored serial numbered parallels in contenders like this, and tons of big names in the set. It's huge, man.
Okay, so moving on, I got to hit up a wrestling card before we kick it over to yours. But the next one is another eBay. It ends a week from when we're recording. So this will end on Sunday. I'm terrible when I'm trying to figure this stuff out in real time, but it's the 2022 first year Prism WWE Sasha Banks Gold Prism. I picked this card because it's first year Prism Gold Prism. And for anybody who follows wrestling, Sasha Banks would be one of the most important female wrestlers, helping usher in kind of the women's revolution of professional wrestling, a mainstay figure in the WWE. She was on Star Wars, Mandalorian. She's got crossover potential, but she is no longer in WWE as Sasha Banks. She recently went over to AEW and is going by her other name, Mercedes Moné, and is going to be with the competitor, AEW, which I'm a fan of. And she's been front and center the last 2 weeks. They dedicated a whole episode on her debut. And she's just like a massive star. And this, not only is she a massive star, she has like literally, dude, it reminds me a little bit of just like Lady Gaga and her like fans, little monsters, they call her. And they're just like running packs and they'll defend her at any cost. And they show up at the arena, wait in lines. Like Sasha Banks, like in her character / Mercedes Moné, she has like that same type of vibe where like her fan base is so wide. And by like AEW acquiring her, that like brings new fans over who might have just been WWE fans. So it's WrestleMania season. And this card, I think, is one of the most interesting wrestling cards just from a timing perspective, too, that I've seen put up. And there's a reason why whoever owns this card is probably putting it up now, because she's super timely and relevant. But kind of back to this like debut year angle, like 2022 Prism in WWE is the first year. So that will always matter. So yeah, man, I don't know, like this debut year thing, regardless, Prism obviously is in all sports entertainment. We just talked about that to lead off the episode with 2012 and something like wrestling. Do you think 2022 is like, since it's the first year, going to be like the year, you know, collectors focus more on long term? Does it not apply because it's wrestling? Like, do you have any thoughts there?
I think it definitely applies. And I think we've seen that with kind of the price realization of those cards and kind of like who owns those cards, like where they're kind of stashed, I think tells a story as well. So I definitely think it matters and it will matter long term. And I love seeing the women's wrestling cards. I feel like they are the most collected women's cards right now. Mm-hmm.
100
feels like that. There's more than one female wrestler that is collected, right? Like you look at tennis and it's like Serena Williams and then it's nobody else. Like she has her cards sell for a lot of money, but it's not like people are collecting all of the women's tennis players. I feel like I see a lot of different female wrestling cards selling for significant prices.
Yeah. You have that's the most interesting thing I think about the wrestling card community is you've got like, you know, Hogan, The Rock, you know, Roman Reigns, some of these like top guys, but like you have the Sasha Banks, the Becky Lynch, the Charlotte Flair. You've got like these Alexa Bliss. You've got these now Bianca Belair, Tiffany Stratton, who's like, dude, Tiffany Stratton, she's like, if I'm trying to like equate it to something, she is like maybe like the CJ Stroud of women's wrestling right now, just in terms of cards and collectability. But her cards are going bonkers right now. And it's fun because it is fun to see like females on a product that command just as much value and money as their male counterparts, and if not more. And that's what I've always found interesting with wrestling cards is that like, yeah, like you can probably poke fun at it a little bit and be like, yeah, these wrestling fan guys are nerds and they like to collect the women more than they like to connect the men or whatever. I don't know. For me, it's always fun because it just shows like there's more diversity of collecting in the wrestling card segment. So excited to see where this one ends up. Let's move over to your first one you pick, which, dude, I hadn't seen this card until you listed it. But based on what I know about his catalog of rookie cards, this might be one of the most impressive ones I've seen. So let's talk about what you have here.
Yeah, this is the, you know, I try not to pick huge cards, but there's so many good cards auctioning on PWCC right now that are big that I could not talk about some of them. So this is the 2013 Select Black Prism 1/1 Auto Travis Kelce rookie card, BGS 9.5 with a 10 auto. super significant. First year select football. Like you hinted on, Kelce's rookie auto market, there's no such thing as a non-sticker auto. Like, this is a sticker auto, but that's because all of his rookie autos are sticker autos. So to me, it kind of cancels out. Like, if you're a non-sticker auto guy, I don't think it matters on this card, because it's not like you have the option to get an on-card rookie auto of his from anything. So Black Prism 101, we have not seen his actual Prism Black 101 auto ever surface publicly, which I think gives this one another bump. And then this card is only sold once publicly. I think it's sold in like 2018. I think I made a note here. No, maybe I didn't, but I think it's sold in 2018 for like, you know, probably of this price, like $500 or $600, which is crazy to think about what's happened for him since then. But I think it's going to be a fun one to watch with the timing, with the lack of high quality rookie autos for him. Like, to compare, his Contenders Cracked Ice out of 21 PSA 10, which there's a variation of that as well. So there's technically two of them. Sticker auto sold for $5,200 at the end of February, and that's out of 21, and there's another variation. So there's technically 40 some copies of that card. This is 101 first year select. I think it could do a big number.
I'm not going to lie here, where last weekend, my father-in-law and his wife were watching our girls, and we got home from the Pacers game, and my father-in-law's wife was watching the newly dropped Eras Tour, Taylor Swift, and it was on the TV, and they left, and my wife came down like a half hour later. She's like, "You still watching this?" And I was just like, "Yeah, dude, I'm watching this." Like, so I watched the whole thing. I'm like, I like sat there and watched it all, and I was like, "All right, I get it. Like, I get it. Like, I get why people are paying money for this. It is a production. You can't talk about Travis Kelce without talking about Taylor Swift." So if you wanted my review of the Eras Tour, if you're on the fence and you're like, this isn't for me, and you got Disney Plus, just hit play and just see what you think. I was entertained. And we're always looking for entertainment with this era where we got kids and we're just at home, you know?
I love it, man. You're right. You can't mention Kelce right now without mentioning Swift. So
here's a fun one. And I will say, the one thing about these cards is I wish that they were out of 50 so bad. Out of 101 isn't bad, but I'm an owner of the 2003 Topps Chrome Peyton PSA 9. Shout out my man Drake. He always gets name dropped on here. He just upgraded. He owns the Pop 1 Peyton PSA 10. But the 2003 Topps Chrome Gold X-Fractors are just such a fun card. Like, these cards, like, I have owned my Peyton for as long as I can remember. And whenever I go through the consolidation effort, I'm like, that's one of those cards. Even though there's 101 copies, I'm like, nope, no interest in selling this because I love it. And so you've got the Andre Johnson, which is his rookie BGS 9 from eBay on here. What do you got to say? And he looks so like young in this card, even though he's got his helmet on. He just looks like another era of Andre Johnson. So this card's super cool. It's got me fired up, even though it's a Houston Texans player and we don't like the Texans over here. But what do you got to say?
Yeah, man. I mean, you hinted on it with kind of your thought process with your Manning. Like, this is a significant card. It's the first year of a gold numbered parallel for Topps Chrome Football. It's a numbered out of 101 rookie year for Andre Johnson. Super affordable card. Like, this will probably go for a few hundred dollars max. I believe there's no tens of this card. I didn't look too closely at the Pop Report. I just, you know, think the card kind of speaks for itself. But Andre Johnson just in general feels kind of underappreciated a little bit. I think he maybe could still have a moment down the road, you know, was a beast in his time. And I think it's interesting to see, I think wide receivers in this league are so dependent on their situation, right? Like, it depends on who's throwing them the ball, and it depends on what offensive scheme and coach they're playing for. And then it depends on how many different coordinators they have in their career. Like, it stinks because there's probably a lot of really good wide receivers that'll never sniff like all time anything because of the situation that they're in. And listen to these quarterbacks that Andre Johnson caught passes.
Yes, he came with the list.
Listen to this: David Carr, Tony Banks, David Ragone. I don't even know how to say his name because I've never heard of him. Matt Schaub, Sage Rosenfels, T.J. Yates, Case Keenum, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Ryan Mallett. You probably know some of these guys just because some of them were journeymen, but like, I mean, how did Andre Johnson put up almost 15,000 receiving yards catching passes from those quarterbacks? And that's why I think he's underappreciated.
Yeah. So TJ Yates, I'll never forget, he started a playoff game, which was crazy. I always think about Sage Rosenfeld's and a Colts comeback where Robert Mathis literally helicoptered him. And all you Colts fans listening, remember that. It's unforgettable. But I think that's why Andre Johnson gets the, as much as I hate to say this, but the reasoning behind why Andre Johnson got the Hall of Fame nod for this class over a Reggie Wayne is that he did a lot with nothing. And so, yeah, it's, I'm interested in his, like, there are so many, we talked about Fitzgerald last week. There's just so many awesome receivers from this era. And like Andre Johnson, outside of like Texans fans, I'm not sure gets a lot of love, but if you've been contemplating picking up an Andre Johnson card because he was an incredible player, this is one of the cards to look at because these things are stunning in hand. We're talking soccer. So we got Messi. We got a little tie-dye action. Yeah. Why'd you pick this one?
It's Messi, and it's early select soccer. It's serial numbered. I think there's a couple cool things to talk about. This is the 2016 Select Terrace tie-dye prism out of 30 BGS 95 Lionel Messi. You know, it's rare. There's only 30. These don't surface often. Like, I wanted to just touch on a couple things that I think are cool, you know, across sport for products like Select. Like, there's three levels of this. Like, most people are familiar with early Select, but for soccer, it's different for some of the sports. Like soccer, this is the terrace, which is the common level. Then there's the mezzanine. The mezzanine, I don't even know how to say it, is kind of the next most rare level. And then there's the field level, which most people that collect football would understand the field level, but totally different names than like the football parallels and the basketball parallels or levels, I guess I should say. But this is out of 30, where in most other sports, it's out of 25, the tie-dye parallel. So just interesting how it kind of shifts from sport to sport and product to product. But it's a card that is the second year of Select Soccer. So I think that there's some significance there. And this card hasn't sold since August of 2022. So, you know, a year and a half since we've seen a copy like this. It's going to be an affordable card. Like, I think the field level PSA 9 did under 1,000 recently. So this shouldn't do over 1,000, I wouldn't think. So affordable card of a legend. I think Messi's kind of in that stage of his career where maybe he's a little bit less in the spotlight and maybe it's a better time to start collecting him than it has been over the last, you know, handful of years. So just an interesting card to keep an eye on at an affordable price, I think.
All right, let's hit on the cards that are being, by the way, this card is on eBay. This ends on Thursday too. So if you're hearing about this for the first time and you're listening to this, the day this episode drops, go check it out. Here are the five cards that we're going to highlight that are being sold through the War of Sports Cards. And you want to start this party off right. Not a bad way to kick things off. What are we looking at here, Nick?
This is the 1998 Skybox Premium Star Rubies out of 50 Jerry Rice PSA 7. And I mean, people know the importance of this card. It's the second Rubies for Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice and Barry Sanders are the go-to 90s football players, you know, most collected players, most valuable players in all of the sets. This card is significant specifically because it was actually purchased raw in my No Recent Comps online community, purchased raw, sent to grading for PSA. If you know anything about these cards, it's super hard to get a good grade. Like a PSA 7 on this card is actually a really good grade. They were hoping for, like, that was kind of, you know, the goal here was to hopefully get a 7. You know, and obviously they put it into market after that, but it's a great chance to grab one of the most collectible cards of Jerry Rice from the 90s that exists. PSA 6 of this, the last sale of this card in any condition was a PSA 6 in July, sold for just under 20K. In November of 2022, PWCC sold a BGS 8.5 for like 33K. So, you know, it's definitely cooled off since then. I think it's significant, and I think a lot of people are gonna want to get this card because even though it's a 7, I would consider this a high-graded PSA copy of this card, and those are always highly sought after with collectors.
Yeah, all I had to see was Jerry Rice in rubies, and that was enough for me to know that this card meant something. Number two on the list is maybe one of the best, could have been players in the NBA, but injuries got the best of them. So why don't you talk about this 06 Topps Chrome Brandon Roy 96 variation gold refractor PSA 9.
Yeah, man. So like you said, one of the all-time could have been's right here, kind of following up on the Derrick Rose talk from last episode. I think Brandon Roy would be on that what could have been list. He played, so it's kind of crazy. Like, we'll talk about the card specifically, right? This is the 96 variation. So it's kind of the 10-year anniversary of the initial Topps Chrome release salute here with the 96 variation. So it looks like the 96 Topps Chrome. It's a gold out of 25. So his true gold from this year is also out of 25, which is the most rare gold refractor from any Topps Chrome basketball release. So I think that matters. This is a PSA 9 pop one, none graded higher. I think that matters. This is going to be an affordable card. It'll do a few hundred bucks. But I think it's a unique card to collect. Brandon Roy, like, he played five quote unquote full seasons. Like, really two of them were more like two thirds half seasons. His rookie year and his fifth year. And then he came back in 2012 for like five games for the T-Wolves. I won't even count that. The only three seasons he played at least 65 games, he was all NBA. I mean, it's insane. Like, if you can Google Kobe talking about Brandon Roy, and you will hear Kobe Bryant say Brandon Roy was the hardest person for him to guard in that era, which obviously means something. I mean, I would have loved to see prime Brandon Roy in today's game, because I think the way he played is like very well suited for today's game. Just look at the history of his career. A couple connections here that I think are interesting and worth mentioning. I coached MPJ in high school. I think a lot of people know that. Michael Porter Jr., his sophomore and junior year in Columbia, Missouri at Tolton Catholic High School. His dad took a job at University of Washington as an assistant coach for Lorenzo Romar. Michael committed to Washington. The family moved to Seattle, and Michael played for Brandon Roy at Nathan Hale High School. Brandon Roy's first year coaching high school basketball. They went undefeated. Brandon Roy got Naismith Coach of the Year. Michael Porter Jr. was Player of the Year in every award that gives that out. Brandon Roy won his first 4 years as a high school coach, won four state championships. He didn't lose in the state tournament until this year. So, you know, he's still doing something in the basketball world, which I think is cool.
I didn't even know that. That's amazing that he's coaching high school basketball. And I look at this card and, in Portland, he was Dame time before Dame time. I mean, I just remember his clutch moments. And, you know, Damian Lillard, obviously one of the greatest players ever, is going to overshadow probably Brandon Roy when we talk about Trailblazers basketball. But I mean, hit the YouTube machine, go back and look at some of his stuff, because I just remember his moments that he did have, even though few, they were magical. And this is a cool card to help maybe represent some of those. Golf. We're talking golf again. Yes. What do we got here, Nick?
We're just going to call this the Golf Auction Talk Podcast from now on. Because this is, you know, I think every episode we've probably talked about golf. Maybe not the
first one. Fake it until you make it, I guess.
Yeah. But no, this is the 2003 SP Authentic Sign of the Times Platinum out of 25 Jack Nicklaus Auto. It's a BGS 9 with a 10 auto. I chose this card for a few reasons. For one, like, basketball collectors will know the Sign of the Times card. It's very significant in the basketball community. Huge, huge, huge insert. Golf cards are unique. Jack Nicklaus is a guy that obviously played a long time ago, but there wasn't many licensed cards. There was none, I think, maybe during his prime. The first was the 81 Donruss, I believe. There was like a few years of Donruss golf, and that was it. Like, it was like the base parallel, and then there was like some subset of like stats or something. That was all you could get for licensed golf. Then nothing like mid to late 80s, early 90s pro set put out some products. Again, super basic, like one or two cards to choose from. Again, couple years, few years, mid 90s to late 90s, there was nothing. And then 2001, Upper Deck came in and started making some legit golf cards. So the first year of kind of like choices and high quality golf cards was 2001. So this is 2 years later. It's a big card, man. I think Jack, there's outside of Tiger Woods, like it's Jack Nicklaus when you're talking about like all-time greats. I think everybody recognizes that name. And then it's just determining like, okay, what cards of his really matter? Because most of the ones that really probably matter the most outside of some neat niche early on cards that aren't even licensed are these early upper deck cards, especially autos like this.
The one thing that I'll just say on, which is a nice little touch, is on the back of the card, there's like a little golden bear emblem to represent his nickname, which I think is super cool. So yeah, by the also too, like we didn't comment on this, like his autograph is awesome.
It is. Yes. I think that matters if you're collecting autos of a player. Like you want a player with a nice auto, and that's a nice auto.
No doubt. It's funny, the next card we got here, which I'm it's struggling to load right now.
I was having that issue this morning too. I'll hit up my guys at PWCC tomorrow and let them know.
You gotta look out for your client here.
Like, that's right. We'll have the pictures up and running tomorrow, I promise, before this airs for sure.
So I actually had someone from the group reach out to me earlier about Duncan Go Nuts and just wanting to talk more about it. And this wasn't planned. So here you go, Adam. Here's a little content on Duncan Go Nuts. Nick, talk about this card.
So this is the 98 Duncan Go Nuts Kobe Bryant BGS 95. You know, wanting to get my No Recent Comps online community more involved, I pulled them. I said, I want you guys to look at everything we have consigning next week. We do this top five on the auction podcast. I want you guys to choose one card that you think we should feature of those five. And this is the card they chose. So I think that matters because we have a ton of really, really good stuff ending what will be this Sunday when this episode airs. Go look at everything. But this is what they chose. It's one of the coolest 90 cards. Like, I love the play on the Dunkin' Donuts, right? As a dad with dad humor, like the play on words hits me, you know, in the feels. The card design itself, like the acetate design, the pose of Kobe kind of zoomed in, going up for what looks like maybe a layup, or I guess it would be a dunk, right? It's the Dunkin' Go Nuts. The wording on the side, using kind of the font and color scheme of the Dunkin' Donuts. Like, it's just a perfect illustration of the creativity of 90s cards, right? They just don't do this stuff anymore. And he is funny because it looks like he is actually going up for a layup. There's no way he's going to dunk that ball. So this should be the layup and go nuts, Kobe. But still, significant card.
These things are fun. Like, I love seeing the pictures that people take outside where they're like holding up one of these and like the sun. With the donut, the sun is baking through.
Yes.
These cards have a collector base. People always want to talk about them and show them off. So I love that you're getting the community involved in picking these. We got one more to close us out. And I've talked about like my favorite part about this show is the fact that like these cards drive us to talk about players who I would never talk about on the show just because there's so many great players. And this, when I saw your list, and one saw this player, I was like, man, this guy was literally one of the best at his position when I was growing up. And then two, I don't know if I'd ever visualized or had seen his autograph. So it was so cool to see it on this card. And like third point, like this Braves bullpen or this Braves starting rotation at the time, this time was just absolutely insane. And he was kind of like the leader of it. So if you haven't been able to guess yet, maybe you could guess, but maybe do the great unveil of who the player is and then what the card is.
Yeah, man, this is the 1999 Upper Deck Century Legends Epic Signatures Greg Maddux Auto PSA 9. Man, that bullpen was insane with him, Smoltz, and Glavin all in the starting rotation, like all number one starters on any other team that year. That was a special rotation for sure. But this card, again, the group actually recommended this card as well. It was on the poll to be voted for. And I thought, man, this is too cool of a card and an affordable card to not talk about. Maddux himself was like such a unique pitcher because his fastball was like 82 miles per hour. I mean, he threw like his such an unorthodox like form, like he moved at his own pace. And I like to call him the Tony Gwynn of pitchers. Like he just, if you know Tony Gwynn, he's like singles all day, like not a big power guy, like, but crazy batting average, just super consistent. Like that was Greg Maddux. Like he was feared, but not because he was overpowering, but because he just knew how to finesse everybody and just get the job done. But this card itself, it's a sneaky big card. It's a PSA 9 pop 5. There's none graded higher. These don't surface often. There's a gold, I think it's a gold parallel out of 100 that's only sold like twice ever. And then there's this base version. The base version is only sold, I only saw 22 public sales going back to 2005 on Card Ladder. So super scarce. I don't think this is the first PSA 9 to ever sell publicly. I looked that up. So I've never even seen the highest grade copy like this sell publicly. So significant. A raw copy did $850 in December. So this could, like I said, could be a sneaky big card, but it might be under the radar enough to where you can get it for a reasonable price. But I think it was a card worth talking about for sure.
Always enjoyed watching him play. He always, like, my dad was an accountant, so I always thought he would look like an accountant, like on the mound. But I love the way he would outthink the batter. Yes. And that's kind of what made him so great. So, I mean, that dude, that we ran the gamut. We are under 90 minutes.
Barely,
but literally. I feel like we could do 3-hour episodes. Our wives would hate us for it, yes. But we could do it if we wanted to. So many cool auctions out there. Another auction talk in the can. Nick, appreciate your flexibility on recording this early. Everyone go check out these auctions and let us know what you think. And we'll talk to you soon.
Have a great week. Thanks, man.
Always enjoy chopping it up with my man, Nick. We had a record a little bit early this week based on my schedule. Appreciate his flexibility. If you like what I'm doing over here, tell a damn friend, sign up for the Patreon group, support all your favorite creators in the space. We'll be back. More auction talk next week. More stacking slabs tomorrow. We're going. Talk to you soon.